Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Everybody, I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Jamie Jennings in Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for January 9th, 2013, episode 568, brought to you by Back on Track Products. Good morning, Horse World.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Hey, everyone. Happy hump day.
Happy hump day, baby. Here's to another week. Halfway done, the downhill stretch has finally begun.
Daddy, I want another pony.
What do they call Wednesday hump day anyhow? Innocuous jibber jabber.
Well, happy hump day, everybody. It is Wednesday. It's hard to believe it's Wednesday in 2013, and it's also hard to believe that we haven't screwed up the opener and said 2012 once yet.
That is amazing. Are you sure we haven't done that? I'm pretty sure I did.
I don't know. I don't know if Jennifer's written out any checks wrong. She writes out the checks. So, you know, that's one of the things you always screw up to about, what, March, I think.
Yeah.
Usually March. So we had this discussion last night on a topic that's completely off horses, but we have to get this settled between Jennifer and I, and you and the listeners are going to help settle it.
Uh-oh.
So I have this quirk that Jennifer thinks is just ridiculous. So we were discussing it last night. I have this quirk about socks. If I put on a pair of socks, whether it's for 1 minute or all day, it doesn't matter. If the socks have been on my feet and I have to take the socks off for some reason, I cannot put on the same pair of socks again. I have to have fresh socks every time I put on a pair of socks. If that means going through 4 pairs of socks in a day, I just can't do it. So is that weird? Am I the only one that can't do socks over again?
Well, this is a very bizarre topic for a horse radio show, but I am going to go with you on this one. I, too, cannot re-put on a pair of socks. I cannot do it.
Good. I'm not the only one. I feel better now.
Maybe it's just the two of us, Glenn. In my world, let me tell you the perfect sock world. I actually have had discussions with people about this. When I become a super uber millionaire and don't have to worry about money anymore, here's the deal. I will never wear a pair of socks twice. I will wear them and throw them away because I hate matching socks more than anything in the entire world. I hate socks that fall down, socks that aren't nice. I think that the best day that you will have is a day with a brand new pair of fluffy socks.
I think we must be related that way because I'm kind of that way too. Jennifer just kind of led me to believe I was the only one that was that particular about my socks.
You know, it's not something that I've been told was very normal my whole entire life. So I think that we are definitely on the outside of this one, Glenn, and that probably everybody's going to think we're crazy. However, as long as we can stick together, I'm glad to know that about you because it makes me feel better about myself.
Well, that's good. And when we travel, you know, Jennifer brings half the number of socks that I do. You know, I have to have a sock for, you know, at least 2 pairs a day because you're going to have to change your socks at some point during the day.
I mean, really, does Jennifer rewear her underwear? No. So there you go.
And on that note, Jennifer, what's coming up today?
Excuse me. Just turn them inside out. It'll be fun. On today's Back on Track Wednesday edition, headlines from the horse world abound as our intrepid hosts interject their opinions on a variety of stories they've gleaned from the interweb, and along with personal clothing fetishes. And next, we welcome back the velvet voice of Horse and Country TV's Victoria Spicer, who is here with the first of 2013's hilarious horse stories from across the pond.
And winding up our Wednesday adventure, the return of the Horse.com's weekly horse health report. And wait for it. On this day in 2007, Apple CEO Steve Jobs unveils the iPhone, which went on sale in June of that same year for the bargain price of $599.
I remember that.
Yeah. That, and how many bazillions and bazillions have they sold since then?
Year one was 1.4 million phones.
Yeah, now they sell 5 million in a day after release. Just amazing. Well, it is Wednesday, and it's time for our daily winnings.
Morning. Today is Wednesday.
Oh, wrong one. The way the show's been going so far, it kind of feels like a Friday. My daily winnings go out to Rachel Rosenthal, who's a good listener, a loyal listener of ours out there in Las Vegas, and Mike Arnold of DrivingNews.us. It's both their birthdays today, so happy birthday to both of you.
Well, my daily winnie goes out to two creatures, my cat, Frank, and my dog, Zenyatta. See, here's what happened, Glenn. At some point in the middle of the night, Frank, I was having like a hot flash or something, so I'm laying on top of the covers. Frank is comfortably laying on my feet, as cats will do, and keeping them warm. So it was the perfect combination of just laying on top of the blankets, but your feet are warm, like having socks on, which you can't sleep in socks, and everybody knows that. So Frank is playing sock for me, and we are sleeping so nice and comfortably. And at some point, Zenyatta decides that she is going to jump on the bed. Not wanting to jump where Mom lays, she jumped up on the end of the bed, which was where Frank was laying on top of my feet. Dog leaps on top of cat, on top of Mom. Let's just say that I am...
My guess is Mom didn't get the best of this.
I screamed so loud that Chad, what? Flips on the light. I am bloody down my legs from, I don't know whose claws got me up and down my legs, but it is definitely cat on one side and dog on the other, and I kicked both of them out of the room. But what happens when you scream in the middle of the night and turn on the lights and you have four dogs in your bedroom and everybody starts barking, all chaos breaks loose, the cat jumps off the bed, slams into the door, the other dogs stand on top of the bed, you're like, get off my leg! You're bleeding, all dogs are barking, husband is yelling, lights are on. That was at 4:30 this morning. Thank you very much.
You probably woke up the neighbors.
I just might have.
And your poor husband, he probably thought you were, you know, that something was terribly wrong, you know?
Well, of course, because by the time he turns on the light, there's nothing to see. It just looked like I screamed, and I was like, no, the cat is on my feet, and the dog should have been on the cat, and I'm bleeding. I'm like, look, just look. I promise, I'm not making this up. I'm like, look at my legs. They're bleeding. Peace on earth. Cats and dogs living together is anarchy.
I shouldn't be telling you this story. I'm not sure I'm about to have a baby, but I can't resist because I got to say, Mel, our listener down there in Australia, I don't know how people live in Australia. Did you see the story that came out 2 days ago about the poor woman and her baby?
Oh, God, what?
No, it had a happy ending. Well, everybody was okay in the end. But she woke up in the middle of the night. Something woke her up. She wasn't sure what. And there was a python in the baby's crib.
Oh, geez.
And she didn't know what to do. So she went over and she, give her credit, she went over and she grabbed the python near the head, and which managed to bite her a couple times. But she got the python off the baby and then took herself and the baby to the hospital because she had gotten bitten a couple times. But she saved her baby. Boy, that's something you don't want to see. Mel, you can live there. Thank you very much.
Well, you know what's comforting is there are no pythons in Arizona, only rattlesnakes. So I'm sure you'd be good.
Oh, we're good. So much better for you, Jamie.
Yeah,
so much better. You know what
Thanks
they're doing?
For that nightmare.
in the Everglades is they actually, for the first time ever, because so many pythons are in the Everglades now that were brought in by people who, you know, got a pet snake and then decided they didn't want it when it got too big, so they dump it in the Everglades. Well, pythons breed like rabbits, and there now is an overpopulation of pythons, and what's happening is they're eating all the small animals in the entire Everglades. So now having the first hunting season for pythons. You pay $25, and they have prizes for the biggest python caught, and they want to kill thousands of them. They're even doing classes. 400 hunters have signed up, and you take classes on how to not get yourself killed. And apparently they're just looking, they're hoping that as many people go out into the Everglades as possible and kill as many pythons as possible. The one they found recently was 15 feet long. When they did an autopsy on it just for research, they found 90 eggs in it. Can you imagine? That's 90 babies at once.
Holy moly. That is just awful. That's awful. That's ridiculous.
I know, but they're, well, hopefully they can get it somewhat under control down there. It's a mess.
When you say that hunters are taking classes on how not to get killed, is that like how not to shoot yourself? Because I don't see a python as a quick moving something that's going to bite your head off. It's those things like wrap themselves around you, right?
Apparently, the problem is they're very stealthy, and as you're going through, you know, thick spots that like there are in the Everglades, they can come down from the top and you not even know it.
Oh God. Forget hunting. I'm out of here.
We're having a lovely Wednesday here this morning. Well, let's get on.
I thought this would happen.
Let's get on to some really bad ads news. We have a Redmond Rock gift pack for you this Friday on Really Bad Ads. Of course, Redmond Rocks are the mineral rocks that Jamie's horses and our horses and everybody's horses that we know absolutely love. They now have Rock on a Rope, which we use for Beaker. He's out there always licking on his Rock on a Rope. And they have some new products also. Plus, they have some human products where they take the same minerals and they grind them up for human salt substitutes, which we use every day. That's all we use now. So we're going to give you a Redmond Rock gift pack that we sent out to you by RedmondEquine.com for this Friday's winner of Really Bad Ads. Send it to Jennifer at HorseRadioNetwork.com. It only takes you 5 minutes. Go on Craigslist. Look up some really crappy farm or horse ads and send them over to us. It's very easy to do, and it's a lot of fun. So that's what the winner will get on Friday.
I got to tell you that Chad was feeding the other day, and sweet, sweet, sweet guy to feed, but doesn't know my system. I mean, I have a system for everything, and I have a horse, Joey. He's the now 5-year-old. Who is kind of goofy and into everything and knocks everything over. And if something breaks on the farm, it's usually because, like, the waterer will walk out and the water's spraying water everywhere. And all the horses are standing around looking and there's Joey dripping wet. Like, he's that horse. So what he does when you feed him is that he takes his bucket, because it's a hanging bucket, because I can't put them into the wall because the wall are panels. So he has his bucket that hangs down in the corner, and what he likes to do is he likes to stick his nose in the bucket and flip the whole thing like 360 degrees, and then it ends up, because it won't go all the way over, it flips upside down. So I figured out what to do with Joey and his bucket flipping. He loses all his grain, and then the chickens run over, and they eat all the grain off the ground, and he gets really mad, and he attacks the chickens. It's a total disaster every time you feed Joey. So I got smart. That big bucket that's sitting in his stall now has a ginormous Redmond Rock sitting in the bottom of it. I was like, I guess it'll help hold your bucket down and it'll be healthy. But Chad's feeding the other day and he's like, honey, come look at this. You've got to see this. Joey put a rock in his bucket. I'm like, leave it in there.
That's funny, because they're big. There's no way a horse could even pick one up.
Yeah, no. He's like, honey, this one, he has really done it this time.
That's funny. And it does. It just looks like a rock. It doesn't look like a salt block at all.
No, it looks like a big old rock. So he'll get some excess salt intake for a while until he stops deciding that feeding time is war zone.
Hey, before we get on with the serious news of the day, did you see what I posted yesterday, the new chicken coop idea for you?
Oh,
so the hawks
hold on.
Don't get the chickens on go oh, horses in the morning.
Yes, I've seen this. Thanks.
that's
all I
need.
It's
cheaper than the $100,000 one we saw that was for sale from Neiman Marcus.
This, what Glenn is talking about, is if you take a Volkswagen Beetle from, let's say, 1971.
Yeah,
and you
I had this Beetle.
Did you really? I would love to have that Beetle. If you took every single one of them, every single piece of the Beetle on the inside, and you ripped out everything, and then you took the engine and the tires off, and you just set the piece of junk in your yard, and then put chicken wire all around it, and you can keep your chickens in it. That is what he sent me to put on my page.
It'll keep the hawks out.
That it will, and it'll keep all your friends out, and you get divorced, and keep everybody out.
We were a Beetle family. I actually took my driver's test in a Beetle, and my older brothers all had Beetles. My mom and dad had Beetles for years, and then Super Beetles. So we were partial to Beetles. That's what I learned to drive stick in a Beetle.
I would love to have one, especially one like that. Well, you know what? The one in the picture has the tires, but this is like the really bad ad trailer tire. It is so dry rotted. You can see the cracks in the tire, in the rubber.
Well, it's been picking at it for 10 years.
Oh,
anyway, on to some serious news this morning. Let's see. Oh, you know, how about Dutro losing his appeal? Tell us about that.
Well, Rick Dutro, one of the classiest guys. Wait, no, that's somebody else. Rick Dutro has gotten himself into a lot of trouble, and he is a racehorse trainer. For those who don't know him or those who think that his name sounds familiar, it is because he was the one who trained Big Brown to the Derby and Preakness wins in 2008. And for the Belmont decided, oh, I'm going to take him off all these steroids. You'll see he can still run. And the horse barely finished the race. So just to show you, he has some pretty sketchy practices. Rich Dutro also has just made, apparently, from all the stories we've read, has made the racing sport look bad. And he has just drugs and whatever you can put into a horse, he has been one of those really shady trainers. And finally, the New York Racing Association was like, you know what, we're done with you. You're out of here. You are banned for 10 years. Well, of course, this is a huge ban for Rick Dutro, and he appealed the decision, of course, and it's been going on this whole entire time. He's been able to train, and of course, he's been very successful. He's been leading, I think, Aqueduct Racing, the winningest trainer there at Aqueduct, 110 victories. His fourth title at where his stable is based, the ninth time in 10 years, he was the leading trainer. And, New York was still like, you know what, we're still done with you. You're out of here. His 10-year ban has been upheld. Dutro lost his appeal. He is now banned from horse racing for the next 10 years.
He fought this hard, too. I mean, it went all the way to the New York Supreme Court. I mean, there's no other place to go at this point. He's done.
Yeah. He is done. I don't know what they're going to do. It's horses dispersing. The I guess other trainers will pick up his client's horses. But his attorney, his name is Michael Koenig, and he told the magazine The Blood Horse that he was disheartened and they were considering options. Well, which fast food restaurant to work at?
Yes, McDonald's, maybe.
in October.
Would you like riding with that, sir?
Yeah. Would you like that supersize? Can we supersize that for you? This is what you're going to do. So he's going to have to serve out this for the next 10 years. And there's one other little thing. He's going to, of course, try to figure out some way around this. But the board chairman said that it's going to take effect when the court order is served on him and that this is done. He's done with it.
Interesting. Well, the Pennsylvania Farm Show is going on, which Jennifer and I are very familiar with. We grew up with the Pennsylvania Farm Show for many, 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 many years. It's a 10-day event.
That's too many many's, dear. Too many.
Many, many.
Yeah.
At the Pennsylvania Farm Show Arena, which is in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. It's the largest indoor agricultural show in the United States. And one of the things that draws a huge crowd in the evenings, especially for the finals of this, is the horse pulling. And Jennifer and I used to love to go to the horse pulling. You know, horses were used for pulling before they were used for, you know, before they were used for anything else, really. And actually, it's kind of funny because over on the Driving Radio Show Facebook page, one of our listeners posted a picture from 1905 in Chicago with, and there was a ton of snow on the roads, and they actually used horse-drawn plows to plow the roads. Can you imagine that the snow, Jamie, was up to these draft horses' bellies? And they're there. Can you imagine how hard a pulling that was? Well, this is reminiscent of the work they used to have to do back then. I got another story to tell you, too, that Wendy told us. But they actually, on the lightweight division, set a record with the two horses, Belgians. Belgians tend to exceed at this, along with Percherons. But the winning horses pulled 10,000 pounds between the two of them, which they ended up pulling that 17 feet. And these guys really do use their horses. Most of them that do the pulling, their horses do farm work, or they do lumbering or things like that, or they, you know, do wagon rides and things like that at events, but they are used for other things as well. And we used to love to watch it. They also do pony pulling. And this year, for the first time, they did mini pulling. Now, the weights were much lower for mini pulling. It was kind of more of a spectator thing. But so that's what's going on, right?
Well, how much did the minis pull?
They didn't say. You can imagine it wasn't very much. They say a horse generally can pull twice their weight. Now, you put two, this was the lightweight team that pulled this 10,000 pounds, and that means both horses together can't weigh over 3,200 pounds. So they were pulling three times their weight.
That's just amazing.
Yeah, it is a very fun thing to watch, and these horses love it. I mean, they dig in and they just get into it. It's a lot of fun to watch if you've never seen one.
Well, very cool. It would be fun to watch, but it would be way more fun to watch the minis pull.
Definitely would.
I love the quote. There's two guys. I love what they name draft horses. So the guy who won, I saw his draft horses were named Skip and Dave.
And yep.
The greatest thing he said, Jay Kessler is the driver. He said, Skip and Dave really came through. Tonight was one of the few times I beat my dad. So it's a family sport.
Yeah, and it's not cheap, and they win like $200. I mean, they don't win any money at all. And, you know, you gotta have a lot of draft horses, which eat a lot. So it's not a cheap thing to do either. One other thing I was just going to say, as far as horses are concerned in the West, you had Madeline Pickens on. And
yes.
One of the things that Madeline Pickens wanted to do with Saving America's Mustangs, the organization, that's her group, was to develop a horse sanctuary where it would be part Dude Ranch and part Jurassic Park and you know, it would be a place where tourists could go, really make it a tourist place where they could go see Mustangs in the wild and be tens of thousands of acres and the whole thing. Well, she's been trying to get permission to do this for years and years and years. And the BLM just announced that they're now going to be doing they're going to move forward with a proposal to establish the Wild Horse Eco Sanctuary in Northeast Nevada. But, of course, it's got all kinds of problems because they got to measure how it impacts the neighbors and the livestock and fencing and water supplies and the economy and all that stuff. Well, they came out with a 228-page report explaining how they need to study all this stuff, and now they're going to spend almost $1 million studying it. What it comes down to is this poor woman, Madeline, has been ready to do this for, what, 3 years maybe, Jamie? It's been a while.
It's been a long time.
She is now going to have to wait for a decision until at least the spring of 2014.
man.
In the meantime, we have how many of these horses sitting in pens, you know, for years on end? And the BLM has been accused of mismanagement and everything else along the way. And we're still going to have to study this for another, you know, year and a half and another $1 million. How much fence could they build around this 820 square miles with $1 million?
Well, here's the deal is, of course, you've always said, and this is the problem that the Mustangs have had for so long, is the ranchers around saying, you're taking my grazing land. Well, you know what? Is it your land, really? Or are you just kind of grazing on it? So, here, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's sides to every story, but Madeline Pickens has actually done an amazing job, and she has her own sanctuary. This is going to be the second sanctuary. The one she's been working on for so long is in New Mexico, and that should be actually opening soon. I cannot wait to go there. And they've got the teepees that you can sleep in, and you can go out and watch the wild horses, and she's got the whole thing figured out. It's a resort. It is a resort. But there are 30,000 Mustangs, at least 30,000 Mustangs in holding pens right now, waiting to go somewhere. And people are trying to it's hard to rip on the BLM because Madeline Pickens has to work so closely with them. I talked about her like she's my friend, but, you know, I only interviewed her. But she works so hard with them, and she's not allowed to rip them. But I'm sure she's so incredibly frustrated. The BLM issued a 228 public scoping document on Tuesday to develop a range of alternatives to examine. 228 pages. How long did it take somebody to do a 228 scoping document when something could have just been done? I don't get it. It's so red tape, BS, crap. I'm so sick of it. Excuse me. I'm sorry.
Welcome to the government.
I don't understand why. I know. I get frustrated with this in every avenue of the government, my friend. So I get it, but it just there's nothing more frustrating than trying to deal with this stuff. And I don't even deal with it. I just read the stories and feel sorry for the Mustangs. And, you know, if you want to be a part of it and you want to go to Saving America's Mustangs, I think it's .org. Yeah, SavingAmericasMustangs.org. Join the fight. And you can sign up and kind of get the news and notes and kind of what comes on and what you can do to help, those kinds of things. Go to that website and sign up for it. All right, enough of a rant, because I need to take my blood pressure down, and nothing makes me happier than thinking about really rich people spending a whole lot of money on horses. And that is what happened yesterday at Keeneland. They had their January sale. And it's a horses of all ages sale. And there's a dispersal of a farm, and Ferris Farm is doing a dispersal of all their horses as well. Well, there's a guy named Alfred Knuckles, and he owns Hurstland Farms. And if you've never heard of Hurstland Farms, neither have I, because it's a small place. And they're not one of the super huge breeding facilities or anything like that. They had this filly that they were selling yesterday. She was by Street Sense, and, you know, really well-bred filly, but they're not the biggest farm in the world. Well, they were the highest selling horse of the day. He thought, well, she'll probably go for 300. He said that everybody kept coming around to look. Everybody was checking her out. And she sold for a record $1.45 million.
Wow. For a yearling filly?
A yearling filly. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
And poor little Alfred Knuckles, apparently, after the sale was final, because this is the second highest sale ever. At the January sales, for a yearling filly, for a yearling, it's the second highest. There was like one that sold for $3.4 million, a horse that sold of Regis Farm named Inkling, and that was several years ago. So it's been quite a while since the horse has sold for this much. But apparently after the gavel went down, they're like, sold, $1.45 million. Poor old Alfred Knuckles couldn't get out of his seat. He needed a minute.
Sure,
he's
again.
Like, yeah. Apparently, he just had to sit there for a while. And the quote was, "and gather his thoughts." Bless his heart. Lucky guy. Wow, that's like winning the dang lottery. You know, you work so hard for something like this, and then your horse is the one that you've been to all these sales forever and ever. You're spending all your money trying to breed a good horse, and then you sell your yearlings, which, you know, when you sell yearlings, you don't get the money you sell a two-year-old in training for or something like that. So he sells his yearlings and just, you know, kind of Kentucky farm boy, and man, he walks out of there like he won the dang lottery.
Jennifer did recorded last night for Horse Tip Daily a series that she's going to do over on Horse Tip Daily with Dean, the owner of Mucho Macho Man, and his business manager. And so you can look forward to that coming up on Horse Tip Daily if you want to learn more about what it's like to own a horse and what all goes into that to own a racehorse, that is. So. And he owns obviously many of them, but so that'll be an interesting series that you can look forward to. Well, before we head off to England, to the Horse and Country TV in Victoria, I got to talk a little bit about England. In that did you get caught up on Downton Abbey? Did you start it yet?
I'm just going to do those seasons in a row. So no, I have done nothing. I kind of thought that would be my Christmas gift from you guys would be season one, but not so much.
It's on Netflix. It is on Netflix. I will say that.
I know, but I don't have Netflix.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. Well, I didn't realize that. But, yeah, it is a phenomenon, and we know we have many, many of our listeners to this show that watch Downton Abbey, and we finally got to watch it the other night, the opening show, two-hour opener for the third season here in the United States. It's already played in England. And it was great. We absolutely loved it. No spoilers here. I won't give any spoilers away. But one of the Downton Abbey stars is going to be doing a different role here very shortly, and it has a remote tie to the equestrian world, and that's Dan Stevens, who as you know, as Downton Abbey fans will know, play the middle-class lawyer Matthew Crawley, the one that just got married. And I love how they call it a PBS soap opera. Do you know how many people watched it the other night? It was some astronomical number, it was higher than the football games. It was huge, and it was the most viewers that PBS ever had, ever, in the United States that night.
It's why Mitt Romney did not win, because the Downton Abbey and Sesame Street fans got really mad about that whole getting rid of PBS thing. Could be. Pretty sure that's why he didn't win.
This is an absolutely huge hit. Well, Matthew Crawley, the guy playing him, is going to be in a film coming up called Summer in February, and he's going to play a character called Captain Gilbert Evans, who falls in love with the wife of Alfred Munnings, the leading equestrian artist of the day. So it's based on a true story, which tells me that you're probably going to see a lot of horses in that movie as well. So that's what he's up to. And these guys in England, especially the actors in the show, have just become mega hit. And the building, the castle that Downton Abbey takes place in, we saw a special on that, and that actually is open to the public, and there is a Duke and a Duchess that still live there that are part of the family that's lived there since the 1600s, I believe. So it is very interesting and fun to learn more about Downton Abbey for all of us fans out there.
Are there a lot of horses? Because I love Pride and Prejudice. I love Sense and Sensibility. I love all the Jane Austen movies. And there are so many beautiful horses that they have in that. Are there a lot of horses in Downton Abbey?
There are in the first season. The first season that you'll watch, there's a lot of horses because cars have just started to come into the picture. It was the late 1800s. And then as we've gone up, we're now to the 1920s, and you don't see very many horses at all. It's all cars now. So it's interesting. You sort of see through the seasons the transition from horses to cars.
Gotcha. Okay, so this is not like 1700s, 1800s. This is actually late 1800s into the 1900s.
Yeah, World War One is part of this and the whole thing. It is interesting to see that transition. And what we found out watching this special was that a lot of the storylines that you'll see watching Downton Abbey were taken from actual events that happened in this castle over the years at that time.
Wow. Okay, yeah, I'm happy to just buy the whole thing. And I just couldn't do Netflix. I was never responsible enough to mail them back, and it was bad. So I'm going to have to go for it.
Go for it. Go for it. And one other thing here before we get to before we go over to England is the Winter Equestrian Festival opens today. Talk about a guy who's had problems with the government. The Mark Bellissimo, who runs the Winter Equestrian Festival down there, which takes place at the makeover of the what was the Polo Club in Wellington, Florida. He bought that and since then has put in $250 million total to make this into a world-class facility. They just finished doing $38 million more in improvements. And, of course, this is a show-jumping facility that is the 12-week festival that is where all the show jumpers from around the world come for the wintertime. And no more beautiful place than Wellington, Florida to come, and no more beautiful weather. So that starts today, and we'll run for the next 12 weeks in Wellington. And Jennifer and I are hoping to get down there and see what's going on in Wellington and see the new facility. So we're hoping to get down there in the next 4 or 5 weeks.
Well, that'd be great. There's so much cool stuff going on down in Ocala right now between all the eventing. And have you been to the Ocala Horse Park yet? They had a big horse trial this past weekend.
It's the Florida Horse Park is here in Ocala, and we were there last year. We haven't gone out yet this year, but we will definitely get out there. It's not too far from us, and it also is a beautiful place, and it is part of the Florida Greenway that we talk about, which is that linear park that goes from the Atlantic to the Gulf all the way across the state. The Florida Horse Park actually sits in that greenway.
So we can ride there. Yeah. Unlike the Kentucky Horse Park, that unless you're at a competition, you can't ride there. The Florida Horse Park, you can.
Have you ridden there yet?
No, not yet. It's killing me.
Come on, girl. It's wintertime. This is the best time to do it.
That's right. There's no bugs.
You need to make friends with somebody with a horse trailer. Okay. And very important to have a friend with a horse trailer.
We actually have a horse trailer, so that's not a problem either. It's just, I guess, getting out and doing it. All right, well, let's take a break.
You know what? You would just not go to Disney World for one weekend, then you would be able to go. Priorities, Jennifer.
Thanks, Jennifer. She's looking at going to a Hunter Pace this weekend that's south of us near Tampa. So she is looking at taking Beaker off the farm. We're going to take a break for a commercial, and I'm playing this particular one for Back on Track Products for you, Jamie, and in honor of your new doggy, Jamie just adopted an older dog who she rescued an older dog, actually. And this commercial for Back on Track Products is to remind you and the listeners that they also have products for doggies.
We're here with Bo from Back on Track, sponsoring today's show. And, Bo, we've discussed human products and we've talked about horse products, but you guys actually have things for dogs.
We do. We have dog blankets. We have dog beds. We actually have dog hock boots. We have dog leg wraps. And this is the same for horses and people. They help to reduce inflammation and get the dogs to feel better. We have everything from toy dogs up to large the big ones.
Great Danes.
Great Danes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Bernards, yeah.
Yeah.
So the dog bed, they would climb in the dog bed, and the whole thing is lined with this ceramic that increases blood flow?
Yes. And dogs actually, it's hurting on one side. It's actually laying down on that side.
Really?
Yeah. It's kind of fun to see. And you know, cats love something in the barn. And you lay on the increased blood and warmth, you know. So both dogs and cats love it. And we sell a lot in the agility business. Not so much over here, some we have done in Europe, but we have not really promoted ourselves so much here. But, you know, everybody, some of my horses have a dog, and we have two kinds. We have a regular dog, some of the dog blankets, some they can have outside, and then we have one mesh, mm-hmm. some they can have indoors, some is a little bit lighter.
Okay, gotcha. So the hock boots for dogs, like these are for performance dogs or like those of us who have older dogs?
Older dogs, you know, like it's not just performance. It's older dogs when they, you know, they start to be aches and pain. And
takes them a little while to get up.
Yeah, it really makes a difference. Without being a miracle, it really helps the dog, yes.
I can see it for our greyhound because when we take her to the dog park, she's a greyhound. So she runs her legs off and then she's a little stiff the next day. So that would probably be good for that.
Absolutely. And we have greyhound blankets. We have Dachshund blankets.
That's, I was going to ask you that, because the greyhounds are shaped different.
Yeah.
They need a different size blanket.
We do have them. And, you know, greyhound, they always freeze.
Right.
I had
hair.
No, I had the Italian greyhound.
Oh, did you?
She always shaked. So, yeah, she would have been a...
They're so cute, Italian greyhound.
Yeah, she wasn't a good dog.
Well, I would like to go and I'll have to go get one for our 15-year-old basset hound, but I'm not letting our puppy anywhere near it. He feels good enough. He drives me crazy. Well, thanks, Bo. From Back on Track, check out backontrackproducts.com.
Thank you.
So you're going to have to think about getting some Back on Track products for your new doggie.
You know what? Yeah, bless her little heart. She's the first thing that we've decided is she needs to be shaved. She has so much hair. So much hair, and it's just all over the place.
Living in Phoenix, that's not good.
I know. And if you had a Back on Track bed, it would completely immediately be covered in hair and would lose all its effect.
You know, every once in a while it's good. And they always look so funny after you shave them, too.
I know. I don't care. It's got to go.
It looks like Victoria's having a bit of a trouble calling in right now. She's going to try again. She's having trouble getting through to from England to our system. So,
did you get that list I sent you?
What? No.
I emailed you a list.
Right now?
No, like 2 days ago. I emailed you a list, and I thought you would appreciate it, of all people. it's a list of basically the reasons I should count my blessings, that I'm a pregnant human.
Yes, I did. I didn't know if that was quite PG enough. Now I know which list you're talking about.
Oh, my gosh. We have the horse.com that comes on and talks about penises all the time, Glenn. We can say the word penis.
Well, go ahead. Do you have the list? Because we need to kill time here while Victoria's trying to call in.
I have it right here, actually. Conveniently, I have it right here. If anybody is offended by the word penis, you need to turn it down right now for at least 2 minutes. But I'm pretty sure our listeners are well informed.
Yeah, we do
okay?
talk about sheath cleaning a lot. So, I mean, kind of same thing.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like this is anything strange. Well, there's these apps that you can use for when you're pregnant. And every day it kind of goes through like what you might be feeling. And it's just sometimes too much information. And the information can be very serious. Well, they sent out this one. It was like week 19 daily details for my pregnancy today. And the message came across as this. It's called Belly Laugh. It's titled Count Your Blessings. This is why you should be happy that you're a pregnant woman, human. The penis of a rhinoceros is 2 feet long. Count your blessings. The penis of a mosquito is 1/100th of an inch long. Count your blessings. This is why you should count your blessings, Glenn. The praying mantis bites her mate's head off while he is currently impregnating her.
I know. That is the rudest thing ever.
I really want to, but God, I don't want to die. Oh, it's worth it. Let's do it.
And I wonder how many humans would actually do it, because, you know, we want to really bad, too. I wonder how many human males would actually do it, knowing that they're going to get their heads bitten off.
I know. Well, another reason to count your blessings being a pregnant human woman is that elephants are pregnant for 2 years. We all know that, but let's just put that into perspective. If I had to do this for 2 years, I would kill myself. I'm sorry. It's just not happened. Many animals give birth to, many animals give birth to a dozen or more babies at a time. Or like, what was it, the snake you just talked about that had 90
eggs?
Yeah, that's not going to happen. And the reason I found that this was fitting, because on this My Pregnancy app, this was the final one, was your baby won't be born with hooves. Hopefully.
That was pretty good. That's funny. I'm just checking here, too. Jennifer does not look like Victoria is having any luck. Is that correct?
It looks like she has been locked out of Blog Talk. Yes.
Huh. Well, let's play a little bit of the audio that you have, Glenn. Do you want to explain what it is?
Yeah, this is. We announced the other day that Mark Todd, the inventor, had been informed that he was going to be knighted in England, and was going to become Sir Mark Todd because of his contributions to sport and all of that. And he's going to be knighted, and Horse and Country TV did an interview with him where he talked about how he heard about it and what his reaction was. So let's take a listen to that right here.
Okay.
This is Mark Todd on Horse and Country TV. Let's do this one.
That's curtsying, congratulating you, Sir Mark Todd. That's got quite a nice ring to it. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
First of all, how did you get the news and how shocked are you?
Well, I first heard about it, it was probably 6 or 8 weeks ago, and I got a letter from the New Zealand Honours people, and for a while I wondered what on earth it was about, and I sort of ignored it for a bit, and the next thing I get an email saying, well, if you don't reply in the next couple of days, you know, you've missed out. So I said, oh, terribly sorry, yes, thank you very much, I'd love to. And then quite honestly, I hadn't sort of really thought too much more about it until obviously the news has leaked to the press a couple of days beforehand, and they have an embargo on it till New Year's Day, and it created such a lot of interest and everything. I thought, oh my God, you know, this is really something special. So,
well, you are known as legend. Anyone who says Mark Todd, yes, he's a legend. So now you've actually confirmed your status. I was talking to Charlotte Desjardins, who trained you yesterday, and she was like, we're going to call him Sir Toddy. Do you think you convinced the Queen? Is that what you've been knighted?
Yeah, well, there's a lot of people calling me that, amongst other things.
That was from Horse and Country TV, and I think we actually have Victoria with us. Let's check and see. Victoria, are you there?
I am here. I've made it.
Yay!
Oh, good. Good, good, good. Because we haven't talked to you in so long, and we have so much to get caught up on. First of all, how was your holiday?
It was very good, yes. It seems a long time ago. Now I'm back to work already, so it was great. Thank you.
Well, good. Well, do you have any comments on the Sir Mark Todd?
Yes, I was listening to the end of that interview there. It's great to see him getting knighted, and we had loads of riders in the Queen's Honours list this year. Like lots of our Olympic riders got MBEs and OBEs, and then Toddy sneaked in there with a knighthood. So it's great to see.
She says it like she's friends with him too. See, Toddy. Toddy, my friend Toddy, got knighted. I love it.
A couple of times, but no, I wouldn't go as far as to say that me and Sir Mark are hanging out all the time. But he's a very nice guy, and it's great to see him acknowledged because he's had such a long lasting career. It's just incredible how long he's been eventing at the top level, and then to retire and then come back and do as well as he has. He's just brilliant. So a well deserved knighthood.
I can't wait. He's always at Rolex every year, and he walks around and does interviews and talks to people and stuff. And I have never caught myself being so scared to talk to somebody in my entire life. I see him coming, I'm like, and I just can't speak to him. He was on the Eventing radio show, which I was sitting next to him, and I was sweating. And I never said a word. Never said a word. The whole entire time, I just stared at him and took pictures of him while he was sitting there. So bizarre. What's wrong with me? Sir Mark, but now I've got something to talk to him about. I'll just go up and say, hello, Sir Mark. And
exactly.
Then we'll start the conversation, and we'll be best friends after that, I'm pretty sure.
You have to text me, though, when you see him. Now that he's knighted.
Yeah, he's even a bigger deal now. I'll be terrified. So, we noticed a little bit of a trend that was going on in England over the Christmas holidays of horses getting themselves into some trouble. Why don't you talk about that? What is wrong with you people over there?
Well, we've had a lot of floods. Actually, when I was over in the States, I think it was when the worst of the flooding was. But there's been one case where 60 horses ended up being stranded on flooded farmland, and it involved a huge, big rescue campaign. And you can see the video of these horses being like ridden through the water to safety. It's quite amazing to watch. But there's also been some complaints that charities didn't react quickly enough to rescue these horses, and they were catching salmonella and things because they're living in flooded land, and it's getting very unsanitary. And so it's quite a shocking story, but do read about this herd of 60 horses that got rescued over Christmas and New Year.
Wow, 60 horses, and this is not all from the same place, right?
All from the same place, this one, just this one case. But there has seemed to be a spate. I mean, if you head to our news pages over Christmas, we've had loads of loose horses running around city centres, grazing them on any bit of land they can find. And similarly, lots of the charities have been claiming that they've had record numbers of horses coming into them this year, because we have had an economic crisis in the last few years, and it's really hitting horse owners hard. So, but some people just seem to think the answer is to just dump them where they can, and obviously that's not the best for the horses, and it ends up putting a massive strain on these charities who are having to round them up and rescue them and nurse them back to health.
Yeah, it's definitely a sad story. Now, some of the stories we had were just horses getting themselves stuck in mud pits or in somebody's pool or, you know, who knows where, but in places they're not supposed to be. And it just seemed like most of them came from England.
Definitely. If you head to horseandcountry.tv/news, you can go to all our headlines, and there has been a real spate. One's throwing themselves in swimming pools. I think we had 3 stories coming from that last year. So I don't know why they all want to have a swimming pool in Britain. It's far too cold, but the horses decided it's time for a swim, and in they go, and they can't get back out again.
Yeah, noticed. I noticed as people are bringing in cranes and all that. So I want to talk to you a little bit about a badly behaved Robert Whittaker. He got himself into some trouble.
Indeed he did. It's been kept quite quiet because I certainly didn't hear about the event in October, and I was at the show, but apparently a security guard and at the show had a bit of a run-in with Robert Whittaker, and Robert Whittaker kicked the security guard, and I think he forgot that he wasn't on a horse, and then kicking isn't acceptable when you're not on a horse. And he's been given a suspended ban for 6 months, and he's been fined £2,500. So it's a little bit of a warning out there to the other riders, a little bit of a reminder about behaving themselves when they're competing. These guys are role models, so it's not brilliant to see one of the best-known names in equestrianism kind of be attached to such goings-on.
I'm curious on how something like this takes place. Robert Whittaker is standing in front of a security guard, not on a horse. And somehow the security guard makes him so angry, and Robert Whittaker's only reaction is to kick. I mean, did he kick him in the, you know what? Did he kick him in the shins? Did he kick him in the butt?
Well, he's quite small, so I presume it was in the shins, but I kicked him off. Unless
he couldn't kick that high.
No.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
And it's been a huge story for us. Everyone's been reading about this, and you know, we don't know the full event of what went on and what the security guard did, and was he winding Robert up or what? But either way, you know, these people are there to do a job, and it's just not the best representation of the horse world that we want to have.
His knighthood did not come in the mail.
No. I think both his uncles have probably got OBEs and MBEs, but well, his uncle Michael and his father John, I'm sure they've got the Queen's honours, and it wouldn't surprise me if one day they were becoming the Sir John or Sir Michael Whittaker, but I think Robert might be off the Queen's list for a few more years yet.
Well, tell us a little bit about what's going on. I think you guys have a series on the set with Carl and Charlotte.
Well, we've got another one of our documentaries about Carl Hester and Charlotte Dujardin. And the last time we saw them was in Carl and Charlotte Dressage Superstars, which was a big hit for us last year. It's now available on DVD and on our site if you want to watch it. And now we're doing a follow-up called Carl and Charlotte Golden Year, which Jenny Riddle's been off filming for the last few months. And it's all about how life has changed for them since Carl hit Team Gold and Charlotte hit double gold at the Olympics. And they've still got their horses at home with them, so you get to see the horses and hear them talk about it and what it meant to them to win. We've got a bit of a backstage gallery with pictures of the horses and of Carl and Charlotte, and of course the yard dogs that get everywhere. So do have a prize, and that show premieres next week, so not long to wait.
Well, I certainly know that Charlotte has had continued success with the record-breaking ride that she had. Didn't she break the record for the highest points?
She did. She broke the Grand Prix record at Olympia this year. She beat Edward Gall's record, and that adds to her title earlier in spring 2012 when she went to Hagen, and she broke the record for the Grand Prix special. So all she has to do is get the freestyle, and she'll have the set.
Well, I that's definitely worth watching, because they're both two absolutely focus-driven and amazing people. So you guys can find that on horseandcountry.tv. One more thing before I let Glenn take over here for a second is tell us a little bit about your guest blog, because there's nothing my favorite thing in the world is an ex-racehorse, and you guys have a guest blogger talking about this.
Yes, and it was quite interesting because it was somebody telling the different side of the views. You know, that it was a real problem horse, and this lady had done quite a bit of work with problem horses and wanted to fix it. And she did the essentials that you have to do, which is, you know, get their teeth sorted, get their feet sorted, and get their back checked. And once she'd done that, she started working through his behavioural problems. But what was most interesting to me about her story is that she did all these things and suddenly thought, I can't do this on my own. I don't have the experience and I don't have the knowledge to answer his problems. And the turning point for her was actually to go and spend a week with her trainer intensively working. And that was the breakthrough moment that they were able to start getting past all these problems. And it is really interesting to hear from someone who was able to put their hands up and say, no, I was doing my best by this horse, but I still needed expert help. And I think that serves as a really good reminder for people with problem horses or with X-ray right. horses, that it's a brilliant thing to do, is to go and seek advice from somebody who's been there and done that a little bit more than you have. And all of us need help. And I thought that was the most poignant part of that blog, really. So, yeah, she's definitely had a few ups and downs over the years, but it was great to hear of someone persevering and things have turned the corner and they're really kind of gelling as a partnership now. So it was a lovely story.
Very good. Well, before we let you go, we're running out of time here. I'm sorry about your troubles getting through to us in the first place, but I have to ask you, we were just talking about Downton Abbey Season 3 just started here in the United States. Are you a fan?
I loved the first series, and then I didn't really watch the second series, so I need to do some catch-up before I... the third series, I think, has already been on, so I'm a bit behind.
It's a huge thing over there in England. I mean, it's a big thing here in America. You know, PBS or public TV has been setting all kinds of records with that. Is people talking about it over there as well?
Yeah, it's a huge big thing, and the Christmas special was a talking point. I don't know if you saw that over there, but apparently it was a bit gruesome. So that was all over. Everyone was very upset about it. So, and I think it's filmed at a stately home at Highclere Castle that also has an event. So this is why everybody loves eventing, because not only do you get to go and have a nice day out with your horse, you get to compete in the grounds of these amazing stately homes. And we are very lucky over here in England that so many of the landed gentry who own these properties are happy to let hundreds of horses come every year and then gallop around, because some of the settings are just beautiful.
From what I can tell, they have nothing better to do. So once a year, they at least get to do something. So that's
what I think. take a lot of running, and even though you have to be pretty from a wealthy background to own one of these houses, I think the upkeep is fairly bad, because I think they probably quite like having horse trails, but having all the other stuff like film crews and weddings and things that they all
said,
end up doing.
I saw a show on Highclere, actually, the castle where this is filmed, and the Duke that lives there now said that it's $1 million a year in upkeep just for the building.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think I'll stick to my little cottage. I'm not in the budget for a stately home quite yet.
Thank you very much, Victoria. This has been a lot of fun. Of course, it's horseandcountry.tv, and we'll talk to you again next week. Hopefully, you can get through a little quicker.
I hope so. Have a great week.
See you, girls.
So glad she got through. It's just not a Wednesday unless we talk to Victoria. But let's take let's take a break for our song, and then we'll be back with thehorse.com. It's also making a return today. So we'll be back in just a minute. But first, we're going to hear from Jared Rogerson, of one we don't hear play too often, called Have a Good Life.
I swear I wasn't looking. I just turned around and you were there. We spent all night talking about the things that make us shine and how we never wanted it like this. You're an angel, no doubt about it. You can see right through my disguise, and the way that you're flying's got me mesmerized. I know you're something I could never forget. So have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see you again, but what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life. I'm like that pack of cigarettes. I got nothing you need. So go on living your dreams, and I'll keep chasing mine. Let's don't pretend I don't have regrets. Have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see. But what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. You could have been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life. It's over our heads and out of our hands. So have a good life, I hardly know you at all. I may never see you again, but what a weekend, I'll miss you so much. I hope you remember my name. Been my best friend, but till our trails meet again, have a good life.
That's Jared Rogerson, and Have a Good Life. You can find all of his music at jaredrogerson.com. You're listening to Horses in the Morning. I am Glenn the Geek here with Jamie Jennings, and Coach Jennifer is in the producer chair today. Today's show is brought to you by Back on Track Products. Well, now we have the return for the first time in 2013 of thehorse.com.
It's time for the weekly health report from thehorse.com. Fantastic information and their attempt to ruin Glenn's lunch every week.
Well, howdy, Michelle. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year, Glenn.
Good to have you back. It's kind of like, you know, we were talking about socks earlier, Jamie. Well, this is kind of like, you know, wearing a comfortable pair of socks today. Everybody's back in place on for the first time in a week.
It feels
yay,
good.
Finally.
Feels good.
So I have to tell you guys, I'm living a little bit on the edge today. Usually
have you been drinking already, Michelle?
It's very early here. It's 7 a.m. So, no, I take what I do for you very seriously, right? You know that.
Yeah, I know that, yep.
Yeah, and so I always, in my office, I always clear my space of my wandering pets. So the dogs get kicked out, so I don't have any dog alarm. But today I have my co-pilot is my new puppy who's sitting right behind me.
Oh,
but
Lord.
He hasn't barked yet, though. I haven't heard a bark out of him, so I think he's going to be good.
So what is he? Tell us about your new puppy.
He's a heeler puppy, a cattle dog. He's blue, and he came from a rescue that brought him up from California. We have a local rescue in Oregon that the gal who runs it handles dogs for entertainment and television. She goes down to California and she brings high-risk dogs out. And this little guy at 12 weeks old was on the kill list, and she brought him up because
aww,
he was very shy and didn't let anyone touch him. And so he is my best friend now. He's my buddy.
I'm so proud of you for getting a rescue dog.
I thought you'd like that, Jamie. I'm really, really happy with him. He's such a good little guy. It breaks my heart that dogs like this don't find homes.
Oh, my gosh. I'm looking at his picture on your Facebook page, and he is one colorful doggy.
Isn't he handsome? So,
he's colorful.
Yes, and Glenn knows I lost my older male corgi right before Christmas, so I was pretty brokenhearted. So he's perked me up. But he promises to be a good boy. The other corgi is outside, though. He can't make any such promises.
Well, you know what? After the years of my dogs barking on this radio show, I welcome your dog barking. So it takes the pressure off me.
Okay. We try to run a professional organization here, right?
Right.
Yeah, okay, well, my dog's under my desk right now, so.
Okay.
The greyhounds don't bark. I don't have that problem. She's never barked. So let's get on to the topic at hand, and it looks like we're going to start off 2013 with some pneumonia talk.
Yeah. So we have Dr. Stacy Oak on with us today, and she is one of our freelance writers for The Horse. She does a lot of content for us for the print publication and for online. You know, one of the great things about the information that we provide is that a lot of it is produced by vets, like Stacy or Dr. Oak. I know her as Stacy. And then it's also vetted by our editorial board of veterinarians who look at everything that goes through. So is Stacy here with us?
Yes, I am.
She is.
Hey, welcome, Stacy. She's up in Canada. And Stacy, how long have you been writing for us? Because I don't even know that you predate me.
I started writing for The Horse in 2007.
Okay, so you've been at it for quite a while, and you produced this piece. It's in the January issue for everyone who's gotten their print copy. Mine just came in the mail, but it's about full pneumonia, and it has this baby on the front cover. But I want to start out, because we're all kind of familiar with pneumonia in humans, but what is pneumonia, Stacy, and what causes it in horses?
It really just refers to an infection of the lungs, so it's really a nonspecific term, and it can be caused by viruses, bacteria, and even fungi.
Okay. And so what is causing it in horses usually? What do you
run
into?
In horses, the most common cause would be viruses and bacteria, and in foals, Rhodococcus equi and Streptococcus would be the two most important causes of pneumonia.
Okay. And then what are the clinical signs that we see in the horses that get pneumonia?
A lot of it is, like you said, similar to humans, for example. And so when you get a cold, you've got a cough, you feel bad, you lose your appetite. You know, foals, which you can see in the print edition of the magazine, they have this very thick, yellowish nasal discharge as well.
Okay. And so is there any lethargy?
Definitely lethargy, and, you know, in very young foals, they may not be nursing, which is concerning because they can lose weight quickly and become dehydrated. And in most cases of pneumonia, you'd also have a fever.
Okay. And so we usually are talking about pneumonia in foals, and adult horses can get pneumonia, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. But
Before we get off the what they actually have, you know, I had pneumonia really, really bad once, and the coughing was incredible. Is there coughing in horses?
Yep, they definitely do cough.
Okay.
Yeah.
So is that like a deep guttural cough that we'd be looking for? Because, you know, like I have my horse, when I'm warming him up, he'll kind of, you know, do the clearing of the lungs cough.
It would be, you know, it would sound a little bit similar to that, but, you know, this is a cough that just is going on and not resolving, and it's not, you know, just on, I mean, it could just be in the initial stages of the infection. It could be, you know, when the foals are running around and they get winded and out of breath, but then as it progresses, you know, they'd certainly be coughing even at rest and, you know, constant or bouts of coughing.
Okay. Well, we all know what that's like from listening to our spouse when they have a cold and getting into the cough phase all night long in bed. We all know what that's like.
If you don't stop coughing, I'm going to be screaming from the house.
I'm going to the couch.
Well, and it's heartbreaking when our animals are coughing like that, too, because there's nothing, nothing worse.
It's worse for our animals that have pneumonia than our spouses.
Exactly. Yeah, no, husband, go take a nap. But worse, oh, no. But so we're talking specifically about foals, but why are foals more susceptible to pneumonia than an adult horse?
Foals, when they're born, their immune systems are not mature and they don't have any antibodies which help fight infections circulating in their blood. And so they get these antibodies from the colostrum, which is the first milk from the mare. So foals that either didn't get enough or even if they did get enough, their immune system is just not mature enough to fight off infections from bacteria and viruses. Not all foals are going to develop pneumonia, but, you know, they're certainly more at risk than an average adult horse is if they're exposed to a disease-causing organism.
Okay. And so that's part of the passive transfer of immunity from mare to foal. So once we have one baby that gets it, it seems like, you know, farms get very concerned about it spreading among the rest of their herd. Is it highly contagious, or does it depend on what's causing it?
It really depends on what is causing the pneumonia. So in the case of Rhodococcus equi, that bacteria, it's in the soil pretty much on every single horse farm, but it's only in certain farms or in certain geographical areas that you have, you know, a group of foals that are exposed to it and become infected. And it's, you know, how the foals, how quickly their immune system is maturing and the number of the bacteria that are in the dirt and in the soil, the kind of pasture, you know, is it a farm that has lots of mares and foals on it every year and the bacteria is building up in the environment. And so those are the foals that would be more at risk for developing pneumonia.
Okay, and so I definitely want us to talk about how we treat it, but why don't we start, since you just described how it can be passed among all the babies, describe prevention. What can you do to prevent this from happening?
Well, I did some digging, and these new guidelines have come out from the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine, and it's a consensus statement. So they dig up all the literature that they can find on the topic, and in this case it was R. equi. And they review the literature and they try to determine how strong the evidence is to make recommendations. And so their recommendations for prevention are pretty much non-existent. And because we don't know enough about the immune system of the foal and even, you know, why some foals get it and others don't when they've all been exposed. So preventing it is really difficult. One thing that they do recommend is screening foals with ultrasound on farms that have had a problem with it in the past.
And that would be an ultrasound of the lungs, correct?
An ultrasound of the chest, yeah. And so, you know, a foal can appear totally healthy, and yet when you ultrasound its chest and its lungs, you can see evidence of abscesses in the lungs, and even though they appear totally healthy. Now, the problem with this, though, is that if they're not ill, do you treat them or do you not? Because there's no guarantee that foal is going to get sick, even if it has evidence of abscess on ultrasound.
So, because their body might fight it.
That's exactly right.
Okay.
So if their immune system is developed enough, then they still have a chance that they can fight that off and they will be totally fine.
Okay. So maybe antibiotics, maybe not. But
right.
Once the clinical signs set in, then
that's,
what?
Then those are definitely the ones that you'd be wanting to treat sooner than later.
Okay. And so besides antibiotics, is there anything else supportive care-wise that your vet might recommend?
Certainly keeping the, you know, the mares and foals of a similar age isolated from other foals is a good idea. I mean, they're just general management practices that are good for any type of infection control, not just rotococcus and not just pneumonia. And, you know, keeping the manure picked up because rotococcus loves living in manure and can divide very quickly. And so picking up manure and also if, you know, just really being on top of it. If you know you've had a problem in the past, then chances are it's not just going to go away on its own.
Okay. So when you were researching this article, you talked to a couple different experts. What was something that you didn't know about rotococcus as a vet that you learned, or pneumonia in general, that you learned as you were working on this piece?
Well, when I was speaking with Dr. Noah Cohen at Texas A&M University, who's a total expert on this topic, unlike me, but he said that ultrasound screening is a great tool, and it really helps identify any foal that's at risk for developing pneumonia due to rotococcus equi. And so he estimated that only about 15 to 30% of the foals that have evidence of abscess in their lungs will actually go on to develop the pneumonia. So he is saying that some farms routinely treat any foal that has abscesses. And that means that up to 60% of those foals do not need antibiotics. And so the problem with over-treating is that it's expensive, number one. And number two, they can develop diarrhea and they have adverse reactions to the antibiotics. And the third one, which is probably the most concerning at this point, is that antibiotic resistance is developing. And so there's evidence that these antibiotics are not working as well as they once were, which the problem with that is we have very few to no other choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is scary for the future.
Very scary.
We don't have options to treat our animals. Well, Stacy, I appreciate you coming on and talking to us about this topic and really enjoy the work that you do for us. And I want to point out to the audience that if you want more information, you can read Dr. Oak's article in the January issue. You can get that online at thehorse.com. You can subscribe to the digital edition. You can buy the single copy, however you want to do that. The article isn't available online, but we do have some other resources. There's a fact sheet on our equi if you go to the free report section. That's a free download that you can print out and keep. It has clinical signs, and actually Stacy wrote that as well. It has clinical signs and treatment options for our equi and then also some prevention tips. And then we have the end of this month on the 31st, we're doing an Ask the Vet Live on thehorse.com at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on foaling and early foal care. So we'll be touching on some of these issues during that as well. And people can go ahead and register for that event at thehorse.com. Coming up in about a week, registration will open for it, and then you can send in your questions as well.
Michelle, thank you so much for having me on today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you, Dr. Oak. It's good to meet you. Appreciate you being on. And Michelle, as always, we appreciate you coming on every Wednesday.
For sure. I'll talk to you guys next week.
All right. See
hey,
you. Good luck with that puppy. Oh,
yeah, good
thank
luck.
You.
Give him a puppy
you.
Toy. And now I'm totally paranoid about pneumonia on my horses. So I got to go clean my pastures and get some work done on the outside. Jeez.
I know. And I have to say I've seen some really nasty stuff with pneumonia in adult horses that has me terrified of adult horses getting abscesses in their lungs. It's very, very scary. Definitely worth keeping our horses healthy and avoiding those issues.
I hear a cough now. I'm going to jump.
I know. That's, yeah, Matt. I think I've described it already, but I watched a video at the Infectious Disease Symposium back in October where they had opened up an abscess from the lung. Yep, hold on, and filled a 5-gallon bucket with the discharge. So.
Okay, bye.
Bye, talk to you later.
She just has to get that one dig in for me,
bye.
You know, that one thing that's going to ruin my lunch. She just has to do it every week. It's like an obsession with Michelle.
Wow, yeah, that's amazing. Just to make sure you don't have breakfast.
I saw something this morning. This is completely off the topic of abscesses and discharge.
Thank God.
I saw something that I thought was interesting. My sister-in-law posted it, and it was a piece of advice for people. You know, we've been reading so much and hearing so much about break-ins and people stealing stuff out of barns and, you know, breaking into your house and all this stuff. There was a piece of advice that an organization is giving that you take your keys to bed with you, your car keys. And most new cars now have the little dongle on them where they have the panic button. And because most cars are parked either in the garage or right outside your house or in a farm's case, it's usually pretty close to the house, you keep your keys in bed with you. And if you see somebody or you hear somebody trying to break in or you see somebody, you know, you hear somebody outside at your barn, you hit the panic alarm on your car. They said, you know, it is an alarm that most people have and don't even think about the fact they have. And that going off, it will not stop going off if you press the panic button until you turn it off or the battery dies. So it's, you know, and it will spook most people, especially if you live in a neighborhood because the neighbors start to look and, you know, it's going to spook most people and they'll take off at that point. Something I never thought about before, but it's interesting. You can use your car alarm as a panic alarm at your own house.
No, that is a good idea. The only problem I see is, like, hopefully it would spook the person who's trying to break in and make them run away, and granted, they don't get caught, but you also don't get hurt. But the other thing is, most of the time when a car alarm goes off, aside from somebody doing bad, nobody's paying attention to that at all. I mean, how many times?
Exactly.
You hear a car alarm go off, and you're like, dang, turn that thing off. Come on. Drive me crazy.
That's
the only
true.
Problem I would see. But at least it might scare the criminal. So that's a good point, Glenn. Good point.
How did you come up with that? For skittish criminals.
Yes, skittish criminals would run. What made you think of that?
Only because I saw it on Facebook this morning. It was it's going around Facebook as one of those things that's going around Facebook. And I saw it and I thought, well, I'll mention it on the show today. Because I had never thought about it before.
You just had ADD, is what it was.
Much.
It just popped in your brain.
I was trying not to think about 5 gallons of discharge.
Ah, thanks for re-bringing that up.
All right, let's
end the suffering for today. How shall we? I have to go nurse the cuts on my leg and put some antibacterial cream on them, and that's pretty much what I'm going to do today. What do you guys have planned?
I have a bunch more shows to record yet today, so... I've got some fun ones lined up, so that's what we'll be doing. We'll be working the rest of the day. And want to remind everybody, get your really bad ads in. We're giving a Redmond Rock gift pack away from Redmond Equine 2. And anybody that's gotten one of these gift packs knows he just doesn't send you one rock. It's a whole box of stuff.
Yeah,
it's
pretty awesome.
Get your ads to Jennifer at horseradionetwork.com by Thursday night, and we'll be having really bad ads back on Friday. Thank you, Jamie, and we'll talk to you Friday morning.
Okay, sounds good. Everybody have a great day. Spay, neuter, and geld. Geld twice if you can. Why not? Make sure.
Back geld.